Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. He was a man of Star Trek, Mr. Sulu, super cool helmsman for the USS Enterprise. That's how fans knew George Takei. But since those now long ago days on an intergalactic starship, George Takei has reinvented himself in so many ways. Always an actor, but now an internet icon, social media master, lord of Facebook, meme guru, Japanese-American witness to history, a big voice for gay rights, and a very funny, candid man. This hour on Point, Mr. Sulu and so much more, we're talking with the singular George Takei. George Takei made his name in the original Star Trek series as helmsman Hikaru Sulu. Now he's an internet sensation with over 3 million likes for his Facebook page, 500,000 Twitter followers. He recently started the musical Allegiance with its story of the Japanese-American internment camps of World War II. He's chairman emeritus of the Board of Trustees of the Japanese-American National Museum. He's also an author. His latest book is Oh My, There Goes the Internet. He joins us from Culver City, California. George Takei, thanks so much for being here. Welcome to On Point.
Well, thank you for that Oh My introduction.
Oh My, where did that come from, George? I know you have fun with it with Howard Stern and all the rest. Oh My is now the title of your book. What's with the Oh My, sir?
Well, it is Howard Stern who made it my signature. You know, it's a common everyday phrase, and I would use it quite frequently. But when I went on the Howard Stern show, and that in itself was a major decision.
Yeah, I guess.
My first introduction was when I walked into that recording studio and met this lean, tall, skinny, wild-haired
provocateur. Right.
Oh, well, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I just knew that he. I didn't know him or about him, other than that it was a very vulgar show. Mm. But they told me that he was very good at selling books, and I had my autobiography coming out.
Right.
And so I reluctantly agreed to do that show. And when I walked into that recording studio, he greeted me, and I said, good morning. And he said, oh, you have a deep voice. Yeah. Anyone with a voice that deep has to have a big d-. And I said, I beg your pardon, are we on the air? And he said, we are. And my reaction was, oh, my.
And there we
and
are.
And he had it on tape, and he played it over and over and over again, even when I'm not there. And somehow it became associated with me.
Off to the races with Howard Stern. You know, Howard Stern makes a lot of gay jokes, or has historically. You're a big gay rights activist. How's that gone down?
Well, you know, I, as you said in the introduction, I have been an advocate for equality for the LGBT community, and I'd been on many national speaking tours, universities, corporations, governmental agencies, but I was talking more or less to the choir. They were people that who were already, if not with us, leaning toward us. And we needed to reach more people, and people that never thought about equality for the LGBT community, but were decent, fair-minded people. And how do you do that? And when I got the offer from Howard Stern to be his, quote, official, unquote, announcer.
That's right, right.
I had to give a lot of thought to it. My husband, it turns out, was a listener. I didn't know he listened to it, to the Howard Stern show.
Your husband, Brad, that is.
My husband, Brad.
Yeah.
And I discovered that he had it on while he was taking showers.
Okay.
And he said, you know, George, you should go on that show because there is that group of people that you said you wanted to reach, the fair-minded people that never think about equality for the LGBT community, that we need to reach. And he will give you that access.
Yeah.
And I was persuaded by that. And that's when I agreed to be his official announcer. And I discovered that, yeah. Brad was right, because the response was totally unexpected. I started getting emails from people in places like Oklahoma City,
mm-hmm.
or totally unexpected places, North Carolina, South
yeah.
Carolina,
yeah, yeah.
saying, I'm straight, I'm married, I have children, I go to church, but I think it makes sense. And if there should be an issue in my community where equality for the LGBT community should come up, I will support it. Or if it's against the LGBT community, I will oppose it.
Yeah.
And so Howard did open up a whole new area for me to till, so to speak.
You know, George, I have to ask you, because I'm so impressed with the character that you've become. Maybe you've always been this character, but I remember, I was awfully little, but those days of yore when you were Mr. Sulu, this incredibly handsome young guy, very, very serious as helmsman on the Starship Enterprise. And now here you are, I don't know, 70, 75 something, and you've got this...
75.
75. But you've got this looseness and candor and humor and seriousness all at the same time. I didn't associate that looseness and humor and candor with you back then. Was it always there? You were just playing that very serious guy? Or were you always as loose as you are now?
No, I don't think I was as loose as I was, as I am now, back then. It's because, in part, I think,
mm-hmm.
because I was closeted. I knew I was gay from the time I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
But I also knew that that wasn't the thing that I'm supposed to be.
Why? Because you're an American, because you're a young man, because you're a Japanese-American? Why? Why not supposed to be?
You know, all those things, when we came out of the internment camps, and by that time I was 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
and our first home was on Skid Row. We were there
in
for
Los
a
Angeles.
Couple of months
mm-hmm.
in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And then my father opened up a dry cleaning shop
yeah.
in East L.A., an all-Mexican-American neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We were the only Asian-American, much less Japanese-American
yeah.
Family in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was seen as somebody different. And my Mexican-American friends would occasionally ask, where are you from? And I said, oh, far away.
Right.
And I didn't want to say, where I really was from. And,
why?
Was it embarrassing somehow? Because I knew that they would get into the internment camp.
Oh.
And that was something shameful, that we were suspected of disloyalty, which, that's another
yes,
whole story.
Of course.
There. But, I didn't want to reveal that. And so I would say, we were far away. Well, where?
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, Arkansas. And they would say, oh, and we would go on from there.
In fact, that's where one of your camps was, in Arkansas.
The very first place that we were sent to was to the horse stables at Santa Anita Racetrack, right near Los Angeles.
Horse stables? You were 3 years old? Do you have any memory of that?
I was 5 years old at the time.
Okay.
The camps weren't built yet.
Mm-hmm.
And... my perspective was that of a five-year-old, for my parents, to mm-hmm. go from a two-bedroom home on Garnet Street in Los Angeles
yeah.
into taking their three children to live in this smelly, narrow horse stall
yeah.
was the most humiliating and degrading experience for them. But for me, as a five-year-old, I thought it was kind of fun to sleep with a horsey sleep. And, if you
yeah.
breathe in, you could even
yeah.
smell
of course.
Horses.
Yeah.
So my perspective of the internment experience was, while I was experiencing it, was totally different from that of my parents. And when we came out, that's when I started to realize how hated we were. My school teacher used to refer to me constantly as the little Jap boy. Which stung.
Even after the war?
Even after the camp. Oh, the return from the internment camps was the most difficult part for us kids. And certainly for my parents, to get back on their feet was a whole different story. Jobs were difficult. Housing was next to impossible. That's why we were on Skid Row for a couple months there.
You must have been thinking about this as Daniel Inouye passed away recently with his lifelong efforts to overcome the stigma of that in his service during the war.
There's an epic story there, too. When I was a teenager and starting to question my background, childhood of incarceration with my father, he told me about Senator Inouye. He said that he was a heroic soldier who fought on those battlefields in Europe, and he lost his arm. And when he was going back to Hawaii, he stopped off in San Francisco and went to a barbershop to get his hair cut so he'll look neat. He was wearing his U.S. military uniform with the right empty sleeve to get a haircut. And the barber said, "We don't cut Jap hair."
Oh, wow.
So you know, I knew, even as an eight-year-old, that life was going to be very difficult.
George Takei, stand by. 800-423-8255 is our number, 800-423-TALK. Star Trek star, now social media star, George Takei is with us. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Star Trek star, now social media star, George Takei, actor, Sulu on the Starship Enterprise, now funny and outspoken on all kinds of stuff, gay rights, Japanese-American history, the fiscal cliff, you name it. 2012 most influential people on Facebook as measured by the Daily Dot. He's number one, 3 million plus followers there, and a stream of memes and comments and insights that have a lot of people just hooked on this rendition of George Takei. He's out with a new book. It's called Oh My, There Goes the Internet. We've got questions on old days and new, George. Here's a little bit. 1969, third season of Star Trek. Deadly alien computer in the form of Kalandan woman, the Losira, played by Lee Meriwether, accosts Lieutenant Sulu, played then by George Takei.
Who are you?
That is not important. You are Lieutenant Sulu. You were born on the planet Earth. You're helmsman for the Enterprise.
How do you know this? Where did you get this information? Are you from this planet?
I am from here.
All right. The captain will want to talk to you. That way.
You do not understand. I have come for you.
You are on the Enterprise.
George Takei, 1969 on Star Trek. George, first question from our listeners to you. Ray in Vermont says, I wonder if George ever feels burdened, professionally or personally, by having played that iconic role of Mr. Sulu. What do you say, George?
Burden is the polar opposite. That was my first breakthrough opportunity. It was an undreamed of opportunity. But then, you know, we knew that our ratings were low when we were on first run. And we were on very shaky grounds. We were concerned about being renewed each season. But we also knew that we were doing a quality show and a show that we can be proud of, even if we should get canceled shortly thereafter. And so I was proud, and I am proud, of Star Trek. And that's what gave me that first opportunity to build a fan base. And then when, you know, we went on from there to build and build and build. But no, absolutely not. Star Trek was not a burden. It had a vision of the future, a very positive, optimistic view. It's still necessary today, despite the fact that we're living in very challenging times, as that those days were back in the 60s. But, you know, Gene Roddenberry, who created the show, said, despite all this warfare, and despite all the bigotry and all of the turmoil that we have, we can overcome. we have that quality in us as the human animal. You know, we are animals, but we also have a brain and a will and a spirit. And if we have confidence in our ability to create, to invent, to innovate, then we can face all these challenges, and we can go on to newer challenges. And we dealt with issues of the time.
Yeah.
We were engaged in a terrible war in Southeast Asia. We had the civil rights movement going. We had the Cold War threatening the entire planet. And at a time like that, to come up with that kind of vision was really extraordinary. And that is still a vision that is needed today.
We've got Chris in Spokane, Washington, who's been asking if that show and that message you're describing that Gene Roddenberry had, that sort of framework for looking at the world, has informed your LGBT activism, your work for equal rights there. Is there a line you can draw between those, George?
Absolutely, there is a line, because I combine that with what my father told me. As I said a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. when I was a teenager, I had long discussions after dinner with my father. And my father summarized our many, many discussions by telling me that America is a people's democracy, and it can be as great as a people can be, but it's also as fallible as people are. And that's why good people have to be actively engaged in the process of our democracy and push, hold democracy's feet to the fire. You know, we were incarcerated when I was a child mm-hmm. simply because we happened to look like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
We're Americans.
Yeah.
My mother was born in Sacramento. My father was a San Franciscan. Mm-hmm. My siblings and I were born in Los Angeles. We are Americans. And yet, this nation was swept up by hysteria, war hysteria, mm-hmm. and racism, and economic greed, and lack of political leadership. And we were incarcerated. It was the most egregious violation of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
And so we have to be actively engaged. And so I combine that guidance from my father with Gene Roddenberry's vision to try to make this world a better world, and that we have the capacity in us to overcome all the challenges that we are confronted with back then as well as we are today, and that we will ultimately prevail.
I may be wrong, but I think of Japanese-American fathers of that day and age as rather conservative. You say you knew early on that you were gay. Did your father know that? How did he deal with that?
He did not, as far as I know, and I did not come out until after he had passed. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to think that he would have been supportive, because he knew that I loved acting and I loved the theater. And this was shortly after we came out from the internment camps. We were living in East L.A. at that time with that cleaner shop,
mm-hmm.
and we were dirt poor. But my father said that there is a form of theater in downtown Los Angeles that is on right now, but probably will be the last chance that you'll have to see it. It's called vaudeville, mm-hmm. and it's a dying theater form. And so I'll take you to see that before it disappears. And I thought the whole family was going to be going, but it was just me, because later on I realized we could ill afford to be going to
wow.
see vaudeville.
Yeah.
He took me downtown on a streetcar, and I was bedazzled, first of all, by all those marquees,
sure,
you know, colored
sure.
lights that
lit
bubbled
up,
and
yeah.
moved
yeah.
and blinked and dashed about and wrote letters. It was an astounding for me, you know, who had spent most of my childhood
in drab camps.
In drab, but desolate places. Mm. And then we walked into that theater, and my head snapped back, and I was just bedazzled by the crystal chandeliers and the gilt on the pillars and the soft plush carpeting.
Mm.
And we went up steps, and then we walked into this vast, huge space, even more glittering and, you know, with crystal chandeliers and gilt. And we kept walking up, up, up until the very last row, and we saw the last of vaudeville. My father understood me, and I think he probably would have understood if I had come out while he was still alive, and that's one of my regrets.
We've got a lot of people here. I mean, you are an online sensation, and they're really pouring in. Wahoo says online, George Takei, clearly a national treasure, also says, will you donate now we're getting big. Will you donate your DNA so we can have more of you? GT says, that magnificent voice on NPR's microphones, I'll be tuning in. George Takei is with us from Culver City, California. Alex in Norfolk, Virginia, you're on the air with George Takei.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I'm a photojournalist. I'm in the Navy, and I'm currently on the USS Enterprise on CBN 6.
Okay.
And we're, part of our job is to kind of be custodians for all the historical documents and whatnot. And we're clearing out our safes and whatnot. And I find an old photograph of George Takei on the flight deck, and I
that's
just thought it was really awesome.
On the USS Enterprise. That's great. Is it what? Is it from the show, or was he on the ship, Alex?
No,
on the
ship. He visited our ship. This had to have been mid '70s. I'm guessing here, but it was black and white, and it was just really cool. It's a piece of history. So
that hang on, George. It sounds like you remember that, George. Take us back there.
There is a story to that, as a matter of fact. Hmm. The Enterprise was coming back from its tour. I think they were down in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. And they were coming back to San Francisco, to the port of Oakland. And they wanted to make a big thing of it. They had been on tour for something like 2-3 years, and this was their first return. And so they wanted the helmsman of the Starship Enterprise to greet them as they came back. But they gave me a special treat. They flew me over to San Francisco, and I stayed there overnight. And the next morning, they flew me by helicopter out to the Enterprise as it was approaching.
Wow.
And great. I got a tour of the entire Enterprise, and then to be in the bridge of the Enterprise as we approached San Francisco. And, of course, it was in the morning, and it was fog-shrouded.
How thrilling, though.
But then as we approached, we saw the Golden Gate loom up out of the fog, and we sailed in. But as we got to the center of San Francisco Bay, an ugly thing happened. Oh. There was this swelling feeling and then this sinking feeling. The Enterprise got stuck in the middle of San Francisco Bay.
The great aircraft carrier?
The great aircraft carrier Enterprise was grounded there.
Oh, no.
And they gathered group of people, including me. They had some politicians on board as well. And we went, we were actually locked up in the captain's cabin. And a publicist for the Enterprise came over and told us what had happened, and that there was a huge flock of press waiting at the port of Oakland, and they wanted to prepare us to be interviewed as we got off. And they said that there was a heavy storm in the Bay Area a few days before, and a lot of debris had been washed into the bay. And the other important factor, which they didn't tell us, but we later discovered, it was low tide, and it was very shallow. And the captain made that mistake and got grounded.
Somebody not
and
happy.
And so we were there for all morning and part of the afternoon with tugboats nudging us and other efforts being made to dislodge us, but we had to wait until the tide came up. It was really a horrific situation for the poor captain.
A humiliating day,
They plied us with wonderful libations. And so when we got off the Enterprise and the journalists were all there and they stuck the microphones and the cameras right in our faces and they asked me what we did while we were grounded in the middle of San Francisco Bay. And I said, kind of tipsily, "Oh, we had a grand time. We invented a new drink called Enterprise on the Rocks." And that was heard over the Bay Area radio and television.
Talk about quotable quote.
Oh, it was so embarrassing. I felt so badly for the captain.
Alex, there is a story for you to put to that photograph that you found all these years later is on the USS Enterprise, not the intergalactic one. Bill in Savannah, Georgia is calling. Bill, you're on the air with George Takei.
Awesome. Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think, Bill?
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
George.
Hi.
Incredible. Just blown away by the opportunity to say hello to you, George. And the more I follow you and find out about your adventure through life, the more impressed I am with your character and your nature. And I just want to let you know that it feels great just to reach out and know you're out there. I relate that throughout the 70s, we pined for Star Trek, for new Star Trek. There was nothing in the original series, and it was obviously a cult following at that point. And when the first movie came out, it was almost like a religious pilgrimage to drive down to Tallahassee, Florida, as a group and go and see that. And,
oh, my. Thank you so much, Bill, for all that support and those kind words. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Bill. And Savannah, George, what have you decided over the years? The
people he's from Savannah, is he?
Savannah, Georgia, pining for Star Trek.
Oh, that's a lovely place.
Very lovely place. Love it. What is it about Trekkies that make them pine for Star Trek? When they're pining for Star Trek, what is it they're pining for?
Well, I think they really were captured by that vision that Gene Roddenberry created, that we had that vision, but also Gene Roddenberry created a team, a diverse team that reflected the diversity of the planet Earth, working together in concert as a team to solve the problems and meet the challenges. And I think, people were very attracted and inspired by that. That's what we need. And, it's amazing. At that time, we were still in the civil rights struggle. It's been only almost 50 years, mm-hmm. 46 years, actually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we have now an African-American as the president of the United States. So there is a basis for that optimism. We are making progress. Things are happening. Yes, we've had a lot of setbacks. And right now in Congress, we have the most dysfunctional, this embarrassing, failed Congress that we've ever had. But it's a reflection of American society. It's important that we actively participate to make our society a better one.
George Takei doing that in a big way online. We'll come back and look at that. Music here from the musical Allegiance, which he starred in just this last fall. We'll hear more about that as well. The great George Takei is with us, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with George Takei. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the wonderful George Takei, actor, Sulu, way back when on the Starship Enterprise, now funny and outspoken on all kinds of fronts, gay rights, Japanese-American history, the fiscal cliff, the U.S. Congress, you name it. He's a big, big internet social media sensation at 75. He's out with a new book. It is Oh My, There Goes the Internet. Just last fall, you starred in the musical Allegiance, performed at the Old Globe Theater in San Diego. Here's just a little bit from that, where the young Japanese-American character Kei Kimura, played by Leah Salonga, is emboldened by a song sung by her grandfather, Oji-san, played here by George Takei.
Remember song I teach you? How mountain can be moved stone by stone, eh? Ishi kara ishi, yama wa hidosareru, yasashii ogawa wa tanima o oreru, oreru.
George Takei and Leah Salonga there in Allegiance, and Kim is calling for you, George, from Kewanee, Illinois. Kim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, Kim.
I just want to say that when I was younger, I used to watch it. And like I said, I think it was a theme of acceptance that drew me. Because you could be whatever color, shape, nationality, and you were accepted for your abilities, not what you look like.
On the Starship Enterprise.
Yes.
That's correct. And not just acceptance, but enjoyment and really feeling enriched by that diversity. You know, we all can contribute something, and acceptance has a kind of a patronizing tone to it.
Yes, yes.
It's on Star Trek, we were all equal, and we appreciated and we enjoyed each other's unique and singular contributions.
You and Uhura and everybody else. I mean, it was a very... Kim's quite right, of course. It was quite a diverse cast for that time, and I'm looking back at your credits before then, and a lot of them look like you had been put into that. I mean, here you are. I guess this was even uncredited, but in 1963 in PT-109, speaking of helmsmen, you were the helmsman, uncredited in the credits, I guess, but who steered a Japanese destroyer over John F. Kennedy's PT-109. Just
That's
kind of
correct.
A Japanese face at the helm, that's all.
That's right. But I did a lot of other roles, too,
sure.
Prior to Star Trek.
John Wayne and Richard Burton, Alec Guinness, James Caan, with
right.
all of them.
Twilight Zone
yes.
with Neville Brand, where I played a young Japanese-American who has a wonderful, wonderful dramatic role, but is very much related to the Japanese-American experience.
Mm-hmm. Kim, I appreciate your call. One right here from Boston. Dave is calling. Dave, you're on the air with George Takei.
Hi, Tom. Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Just great. How are you?
Good, thanks. So I just wanted to make a comment about why I think you're so funny. And I think that in large part, you've become kind of the anti-Sulu. Because
what's that?
Our impression of you from Star Trek is, as Tom mentioned earlier, very serious. You're anything but. On Facebook, in particular, and so the expectation of you to represent the character that you used to play, I think, is still very strong in our culture. And we're of course introduced to you as this person who definitely serious, but I think for most of us, you know, our introduction to you in the current day is very comical, and it's ironic. It plays off our expectation, and it makes it that much funnier. Once we get the joke, though, I think is your message really comes through, and in some ways, your outspokenness kind of harkens back to the Prime Directive, if you will.
That's right.
So there's some inconsistency, but then it kind of settles down into consistency, and I think that's what enables the us to feel the continuity. Your character, and that's what helps propel your popularity.
Laughter is what makes life worth living, isn't it? I mean, yes, we have a lot of challenges, and we have a lot of things that make life a bit of a struggle. Mm-hmm. But without laughter, without joy, without the enjoyment of the wonderful and funny and ridiculous and preposterous and ironic aspect of life, you know, it becomes all glum and dour. So, you know, it's the enjoyment of life, reveling in it. The very fact that we have the internet and social media, I mean, it's an amazing thing, but that's connected us in such an incredible way. I mean, I'm, you know, I'm 75 years old. I grew up with my ears attached to a radio, a thing called radio that transported me. But now, you know, we can connect and share personally and globally. I mean, I have people from Australia and from Poland, Germany. It's an amazing world that we live in.
When did you key into that, George? What made you think to yourself, whoa, social media are something interesting. I think I'm going to run with this, because you have certainly run with it. 3 million plus on Facebook and all the rest. When did you say, oh my, here's something big to do?
Well, it all again ties into my mission to raise the awareness of Americans to the fragility of our democracy, the story of the internment, how hysteria can take over, and democracy, in the name of democracy, we can do horrific things. And I, as I said, I've been on speaking engagements and so forth. But I met this extraordinarily gifted composer-lyricist, Jay Kuo, and we decided to tell that story as a Broadway musical.
The now, internment in order, story in Allegiance.
The internment story, yes. And the importance for all Americans to know about this, because I'm always shocked by the number of seemingly well-informed, educated people that say to me, I had no idea something like the internment happened right here in the United States.
That Japanese Americans in their many thousands imprisoned during World War II.
Right here in the United States, within, you know, the borders of this country. And
no crime, nothing, just for being Japanese Americans.
Innocent people, you know. And no trial, no charges, you know. It was the most unconstitutional thing. Well, so we decided to do this as a musical, but we want to market this musical. We want it to be successful on Broadway. And yet people know very little about the internment. And so we got to pique their interest. And how do we do that? Well, we thought, we have this thing called the internet and Twitter and Facebook, social media. And so, you know, I started out with thinking, hoping that we would reach like about 50, 100,000, we would be happy with that. And so we started out with that. And in order to get the likes, we kind of experimented. You know, how do we get the likes? And we found that, a little message got some responses. But the most likes were gotten by the funnies. Yeah. And I thought,
We
and
can do that.
Then, we can do that. And then we also found that whenever we put pictures on, memes, funny memes, then that got even more likes. So we did that.
And off you
And then if we're on regularly, more and more people will, you know, come to expect to find us.
And follow you.
And so regularity.
Right.
And so it kept growing and growing. And I am still astounded at the growth of this thing. I mean, as we're speaking, within this hour, we're going to get tens of thousands of new people coming on board, you know?
It's amazing.
I mean, it just growed and growed just like Topsy.
And it's so big and funny and regular and all the rest, but serious as well. I mean, you're really using it to get messages out there, sometimes outrageous. Julie writes us here on Twitter, no less. Lazy Julie says, please ask George if his husband follows him on Twitter, Facebook, and if he ever hears, don't post that during an argument.
Brad is very controlling.
Really?
And I am very independent. Opposites sometimes, you know, come to... But we know how to compromise.
Okay, I guess
as so. Some people in Washington do not.
Yeah, you've been together a while.
We know how to compromise.
Yeah, yeah. Tony in Charlottesville, Virginia. Tony, you're on with George Takei.
Hi, George and Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question, because I know you're friends with Kathy Griffin, and I remember seeing on her show a little bit ago, it was actually a few years ago, that she hired her mother to manage her Facebook for her. And it was like ridiculous things like, you know, coupons for the store on sale. And she eventually fired her mother. So I'm
wondering,
I love sharing your things with my friends on Facebook. The most recent one was that snowman protesting global warming thing, which is hilarious, and all my friends love it. But I'm wondering, do you actually find all the things that you post, or do you hire somebody to you know, kind of manage your Facebook and find little funny things and go, oh, that's great, let's post that?
Good question, Tony George. Good is it question. All you?
As I said, you know, the regularity, the consistency is important. But when I'm working, you know, when I'm doing Allegiance in San Diego at the O Globe, and we are headed to Broadway. So,
oh, good.
All
we'll
those
look
of you on the East Coast, be prepared. Yes.
Okay.
It's a short trip from Boston down.
Yeah. So you hire someone to do some of the work when you're away?
Initially it was Brad and me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes we'd want to go away for a while.
Sure.
You know, go to London and see some plays. And so we took some interns. Initially one, Aunt Trevor. And then we found that it's nice to have
help
a Trevor around.
Yeah.
And so we got more Trevors. And yes, I do have, and you know, we
well, you hire well, because it's a really good stream of material they put up.
Yeah, and the material is really what my fans send me, and I put my those commentaries are mine. That is genuinely me, but I do not take credit for the memes. They are very clever, very funny, and I'm very grateful that I have those clever, funny meme creators.
A couple more callers, if we may. James in Georgetown, Massachusetts. James, you're on with George Takei.
Hi, Tom, and hi, George.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say thank you. I'm a college kid, and I'm part of the LGBT community, and it's so amazing that someone with as much heft across so many generations and iconic as you and funny and intelligent stands up for the rights of me personally every day and for people like me and anyone who isn't granted the rights they deserve. And thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, we're all in this together, James, and I appreciate you pulling at the wagon as we all are. And I know, and I'm optimistic with this as well, and particularly in the last few years, incredible. I mean, just the past year alone, amazing things have happened. You know, in California, we had Proposition 8 that banned marriage equality. That's before the Supreme Court, and I'm very confident we're going to prevail. But in the last election, there were four LGBT equality issues on the various state ballots. We were hoping for a victory on just one of them because we've been losing in state after state. It's always been through the judicial route that we've gotten equality. And so we were just praying and hoping that we would win. We would have our first win in the last election. The astounding thing is that we got all four victories.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And I know that Proposition 8 will be ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. I'm concerned about the DOMA challenge because
the Defense of Marriage Act, yeah.
Defense of Marriage Act, because Justice Elena Kagan has indicated that she might recuse herself.
Because of her earlier work on that front.
That's right, as Solicitor General.
Yeah.
And I really think that if she's going to recuse herself, then Justice Scalia needs to really seriously consider recusing himself because he has obviously, clearly shown himself to be biased. Clearly.
Against gay Americans, you're saying, because of his public comments.
LGBT Americans, yes, because of his public comments, comparing homosexuality to murder, which is outrageous. And but I don't think he will. So it's the Defense of Marriage Act challenge, I think, is going to be a very, very close and closely watched ruling.
I'm going to snag one more quick call. Pax is calling from New Orleans. Pax, you're on with George. We just have half a minute, Pax.
Hi, George and Tom. Thank you for having me. You know, though I grew up with Sulu and the easy idealism of Star Trek, which did shape my young mind, it is, it's how you have reinvented yourself now as a beacon of kind and clever and informed humor in the face of all the base behavior that we're barraged with in our society that really has made me a devoted fan. And I really am. I think you're wonderful. So thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you very much for that kind comment. You're properly named, Pax.
Yes.
Peace.
Woman of Peace. It must feel great to hear Pax calling in at this point in your life and be so widely followed with that kind of big hug from New Orleans. It must just feel great, George.
Isn't that amazing? I think about, you know, the art from my childhood where we were such a hated people.
Yeah.
We were pariahs. And now, we've heard just this 1 hour. It is an amazing country, and we are an amazing people.
George Takei, called National Treasure at onpointradio.org today and embraced by
Pax embarrassing
herself
me.
From New Orleans. His new book is Oh My, There Goes the Internet. Look for his musical on Broadway in the months ahead, Allegiance. Joined us today from Culver City, California. George, it's been a tremendous pleasure. Thank you so much for being here.
I've enjoyed this thoroughly. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.